Imagine for a second that you are tasked with building a massively complex tech platform,
Right.
like full stack infrastructure, databases, payment gateways, live streaming. But there's just one catch. You know absolutely zero about the field you're building it for.
Yeah, which historically speaking is basically impossible. I mean, domain expertise is step one. You just cannot build a system to calculate something if you don't even understand the math behind it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, introduce artificial intelligence into the mix, and those old rules just completely evaporate. So today's deep dive is opening up a really fascinating developer diary. It's dated February 18th, 2026.
Yeah, the Pan Pan Mao Diary.
Right, PanMao.
Yeah.
It's this production-ready fortune-telling platform. And the sheer scale of what this one single developer accomplished is just, it's staggering. We are talking 29 days, over 1,100 commits, and 109 pull requests.
Which is just wildly fast.
Yeah. And they launched nine entirely different product verticals, like Taro and Bazzi. And my favorite detail from the source material is that after building this incredibly sophisticated astrology engine, the developer confesses they still can't even explain what a heavenly stem is without looking it up.
Because the AI completely handled all the domain knowledge, which is wild, right? It really forces us to look at what the human developer was actually doing with their time. I mean, if the AI is calculating the astrological charts and like generating the tarot card meanings, the human isn't the fortune teller anymore. They are acting entirely as a systems engineer.
And that is our mission today. We are not here to talk about the mysticism of fortune telling. We want to explore the last mile of software development because we're going to examine the hardest final infrastructure challenges this developer faced to take the app from a cool AI prototype to a resilient, production-ready product.
Right, getting it over the finish line.
Because building with AI is sort of like having a lightning-fast construction crew, right? They can throw up the walls and the roof in record time, but you still have to be the human architect who figures out why the plumbing leaks every time you turn on the kitchen lights.
Oh, the plumbing is always what gets you. I mean, generative AI is great at building structural illusions. It writes code that looks perfectly sound in isolation, but the moment you connect it to the physical reality of a real browser or a network, that illusion shatters.
So let's start with a perfect example of that shattered illusion, the UI reality check. So the AI helped build nine distinct visual identities for Pan Pan Mao, deep blings for the central hub, mystic purples for tarot, traditional reds for the Bazzi section.
Sounds great on paper.
Right, it looked beautiful. But the front-end architecture just buckled under the weight of those themes. There was just a one specific framework feature called React Portals. And PR number 67 in this diary documents a 30-file nightmare where every single drop-down tooltip and modal was just rendering with completely broken colors.
Yeah, and to understand why a feature breaks a color palette like that, you really have to look at how modern web frameworks manipulate the browser. Because in React, you have your component tree, which is the logical structure of your code.
Like how the developer visualizes the app in their head.
Exactly. But the browser doesn't care about your component tree. It only cares about the physical DOM tree, the literal HTML structure.
Wait, but if the framework is supposed to manage the DOM for you, why would they ever drift apart?
Well, because sometimes the physical layout of a web page actively fights what you want to do visually. So say you have a tiny scrollable box. And inside that box is a button that opens a large drop-down menu. If you render that drop-down inside the tiny box, the browser will literally clip it off.
Oh, so the user only sees like the top half of the menu.
Right. So to bypass this, React uses a function called Create Portal. It basically takes your drop-down menu, rips it out of its logical place in the component tree, and just teleports it to the absolute top root of the document so it can float freely over everything else.
Okay, so teleportation solves the clipping issue. But why does that suddenly break the mystic purple color scheme?
Because CSS, the styling language controlling those colors, is physically bound to the DOM tree, the developer had a wrapper element that essentially said, everything inside this box gets the purple theme.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but Create Portal just teleported the dropdown completely outside of that box. So the dropdown is now sitting at the root of the document, completely blind to the CSS variables that were supposed to style it.
It is literally like building a beautiful secret room in a house, but accidentally wiring its lights to the neighbor's breaker box. I mean, the switch is right there in the room, but the power is completely disconnected.
That is a great way to put it.
But I have to push back here for a second. Because AI context windows are massive now, right? If I feed an advanced AI my entire code base, Why can't it just read the CSS and realize the portal is out of bounds? Why are these specific types of UI bugs so notoriously difficult for AI coding assistants to spot in the initial build?
Well, parsing text is fundamentally different from simulating a spatial rendering engine. The AI reads the React file and sees a perfectly constructed portal, and it reads the CSS file and sees perfectly written color variables.
Right.
But it doesn't possess the physical intuition of a browser. It isn't running, you know, a virtual copy of Chrome in its neural network to realize that appending an element to the document body severs the CSS inheritance chain. And what's worse, this bug was completely invisible in development.
Yeah, because they were only testing one app at a time.
Exactly. It's only in production when a real user switches from the blue hub to the red app and opens a modal that the UI suddenly fractures.
Yeah, and the diary notes that the first attempt to fix this, PR64, was just an absolute hack. They tried using a JavaScript method called .closest to make the portal constantly like look over its shoulder, figure out what theme the user was supposed to be in, and forcefully attach a hard-coded class.
Which is just such a fragile solution, it falls apart at scale. When you have 13 different components using portals across 9 product verticals, that hack requires writing brittle, imperative code in dozens of places.
Which is why the final fix, PR67, is such a brilliant piece of architectural thinking. The human developer finally stepped in and redesigned the entire flow. They create a theme provider context so the ask state always knows the active theme, and they built a use theme class hook to instantly access it.
And then they engineered the brand new themed portal component, right?
As a drop-in replacement. So now, whenever an element teleports, it wraps itself in a protective theme layer before it travels. And they even integrated a mutation observer.
Which is just the elegant touch. By directly watching the DOM for changes to the root HTML tag, the portal instantly knows if the user toggled dark mode. It totally bridges the gap between React's virtual memory and the browser's physical reality.
But, you know, a beautiful dark mode mobile is totally useless if the data fails to load. Visuals are just the paint. We really need to talk about what happens when the actual floor falls out from under the user.
Yeah, the networking issues.
Exactly. Moving from the visual UI challenges to the harsh physical reality of mobile networks. So PR105 in this diary spans an astonishing 56 files. Because the core feature of the platform is streaming AI-generated fortunes to the user, piece by piece.
Right.
But if a user is on a spotty mobile connection, which is super common in China, their target market and their train goes into a tunnel midstream. They lose their entire reading.
Yeah.
And terribly, they lose their paid platform credits.
And that is an immediate, catastrophic failure of user trust. The user doesn't care that their cellular provider dropped the packets. They paid a credit, the app crashed, and they feel robbed.
So you have to build network resiliency.
You have to.
So to fix this, the developer implemented heavy server-side stream buffering. Every single one of the 19 AI streaming routes was updated to cache chunks of text into a database table called stream buffers, all managed by a new stream buffer manager.
That's a massive shift.
Yeah. And if a client disconnects, they can just hit a specific GET route to recover the full accumulated response. They even built an automated cron job just to clean out expired buffers every 15 minutes.
And just consider the jump in complexity here. Before this, the server was just acting as a dumb pipe, passing words from the AI directly to the user. But now the server has to maintain the memory of an interaction.
Right.
It is simultaneously streaming a response, executing high-frequency database writes, maintaining a session state, and running scheduled background cleanups. That is heavy back-end infrastructure.
Which is exactly why the outcome of PR105 completely defies the laws of software physics.
Right.
Because you add database layers, state managers, and background jobs, and you expect the code base to swell massively.
Of course.
But this PR resulted in a net negative 186 lines of code. They added all that functionality and somehow deleted nearly 200 lines.
Well, that's the hallmark of a real structural refactor. The code shrank because they didn't just add a feature, they unified a fragmented system.
Right, the developer realized they had 3 completely inconsistent AI streaming patterns scattered across 14 components. So they built one unified use AI stream hook to replace all of them. It's like walking into a room with 3 messy extension cords tangled across the floor, powering different lamps, and just replacing them all by installing one proper built-in wall outlet.
That's exactly what it is.
But this is what I want to ask you about. We usually associate adding database layers and cron jobs with massive code base bloat. Does AI make it easier to accidentally create messy code like those extension cords, or does it make it easier to eventually consolidate it into the wall outlet?
Honestly, the reality is that generative AI does both, and it all comes down to how large language models handle context.
How so?
Well, when you start a project on Monday and ask the AI to build a tarot stream, it optimizes for that immediate prompt and writes pattern A. But by Thursday, you ask it to build a Bozzi stream. Its context window has shifted, so it solves the problem slightly differently, creating pattern B.
So the AI lacks structural object terminants.
Exactly. It writes fragmented code over time because it is incredibly localized in its thinking, so it naturally generates those tangled extension cords.
Always. But then, when the human architect finally steps back, observes the whole system, and dictates a new unified pattern, you know, like, here's how all streams will work now, the AI is unparalleled at executing that tedious multi-file refactoring.
Precisely. The human provides the spatial awareness to spot the duplication, and the AI provides the raw typing speed to execute the negative line count cleanup.
That makes so much sense. But holding that stream in a server buffer introduces an entirely new vulnerability, right? Because now you aren't just passing data, you are holding onto text that an AI is actively hallucinating in real time, which forces you to inspect exactly what is in that buffer before it hits the user's screen.
Yeah, we have to talk about moderation.
We do. Because PR104 documents the evolution of the platform's content filter. Version 1 was super blunt. If the AI generated a sensitive keyword, the entire message was just blocked.
It's just terrible UX.
Terrible. So version 2, from back in PR78, tried to be stream aware, but it had a brutal user experience too. If a prohibited word appeared, it just violently severed the connection. The user was left staring at a half-finished sentence, and again, their paid credits were gone.
Yeah, that punitive design basically treats the user like a criminal for something the AI decided to say.
Exactly. So version 3 implements what the developer calls boundary-safe inline masking. Instead of killing the stream, it replaces the offending text with the characters for detected prohibited word. So the stream continues completely uninterrupted.
But the mechanics of actually catching those words in a stream are incredibly difficult.
Because they get split up.
Yeah, data streams don't arrive in neat whole words. So imagine the network is sending the prohibited word, let's just say apple. Chunk one arrives containing just the letters A and P. A basic filter scans it, sees no problem, and renders it to the screen. Then a millisecond later, chunk two arrives with P, L, E. The filter scans it, sees no problem, and renders it. And suddenly, the prohibited word is sitting right there on the user's screen because it was sliced perfectly in half by the network protocol.
So to solve that, the developer engineered a stream filter that artificially holds back the accumulated buffer, peeks at the boundaries where the chunks fuse together, and only releases the data when it's proven safe. I mean, they wrote 158 distinct automated tests across 6 files just to ensure this masking didn't break during weird network hiccups.
That's incredibly thorough.
It is. But honestly, the most nuanced part of this whole moderation system is the dual filter architecture.
Oh, definitely. Because the rules for what goes in cannot be the rules for what comes out.
Right. The input filter scanning what the user types is highly aggressive. It blocks advertising, political phrasing, adult content, criminal terms. But the output filter scanning what the AI replies is actually far more relaxed.
Yeah, they specifically had to remove the block on advertising terms.
Yes. And the reason why is so funny. Because it's a fortune-telling AI, it naturally generates astrological readings that trigger blunt ad filters. Like it uses words like part-time work or recruitment. And my absolute favorite false positive, Sana.
Sana?
Yes. The AI looks at a star chart and says, you know, your cosmic destiny involves a relaxing trip to the sauna. And the old filter was flagging it as an illegal underground advertisement.
Okay, that is a hilarious visual. But it really highlights a fundamental shift in how we have to build trust and safety tools.
I really want to focus on that shift. Because does working with generative AI force developers to completely rethink content moderation? I mean, since AI doesn't just retrieve bad information, but actually hallucinates perfectly innocent context.
It absolutely does. It destroys the entire premise of traditional moderation, which relies entirely on intent. Like, if a human user types recruitment or sauna 50 times a minute, their intent is clearly to spam the platform. The system catches the string and bans the user.
Right, because it's obvious.
But an LLM has zero intent. It is simply calculating the mathematical probability of the next token. So in the context of predicting wealth from a tarot card, part-time job is highly probable. You just can no longer rely on static lists of bad words. Toxicity is now entirely dependent on context.
Which requires these state-aware, dual-layered architectures to prevent the app from filtering itself into uselessness.
Exactly.
But, you know, masking out a sauna recommendation is one level of compliance. When that buffered text hits the borders of a highly regulated market, moderation stops being a quirky UI feature and scales into absolutely necessity.
Oh, absolutely. And the developer was launching this application in the Chinese market, which possesses some of the most rigorous and exacting technological regulations on the planet. Compliance there is not a checkbox. It is the entire foundation of your infrastructure.
Yeah. The source material lists out the legal frameworks they had to satisfy, and it is intense. We are talking about the interim measures for generative AI, the deep synthesis provisions, and the algorithm recommendation provisions.
It's a massive legal burden.
Massive. To meet these laws, PR83 details how the developer had to build browser language auto detection just to separate English and Chinese legal pages. They had to engineer cross-border data transfer mechanisms, automated decision-making transparency portals, and a strict 5-step data breach response protocol.
With a 72-hour regulatory notification requirement, right?
Yes, mathematically guaranteeing notification within 72 hours.
See, building a 72-hour breach protocol isn't just writing a nice PDF document. It means your code must be structurally capable of tracing the exact lineage of every single piece of data. If your code base is messy, you physically cannot comply with the law.
Which perfectly explains the massive centralization effort we see in PR102. The diary shows that legal labels and compliance mappings were scattered all over the place across 3 different consumer files in the front end, like the history modal, the credits mapping, the history config.
Right. So if a regulation changed, you had to hunt down 180 lines of duplicated text.
Exactly. So PR102 just took a sledgehammer to that structure, merging all of it into 2 central source of truth files within an internationalization package, features.ts and actions.ts. It ripped out 223 lines from the scattered files and added 607 lines centrally.
And by creating features.ts, the developer turned a vague legal requirement into a highly structured data mapping. When an auditor asks how user consent maps to a specific feature, the developer doesn't have to guess. They have a single centralized file that controls the entire legal reality of the app.
It is exactly like moving from a neighborhood lemonade stand to a fully licensed restaurant.
That's a great analogy.
Right. Because when you were just pouring lemonade on your front lawn, nobody cares how you label the cups.
Mm.
But the second you open the restaurant, you have health inspectors, zoning permits, and suddenly you need a centralized, auditable supply chain for your lemons.
Yeah, you can't just wing it anymore.
Exactly. We constantly hear about the move fast and break things culture of AI startups. But this diary proves that to survive in reality, you actually have to build incredibly rigid, legally compliant structures, right?
Yeah. Well, move fast and break things is a prototyping mindset. It works beautifully when you are testing if the AI can accurately generate a Bozzi chart. But the moment you connect that AI to real mobile networks, real payment gateways, and real international laws, you hit the friction of reality.
Yeah.
The AI can write the functions fast, but the human has to painstakingly architect the rigid structure that keeps the app out of legal jeopardy.
Which brings us to the ultimate synthesis of this deep dive. The core question was, can one single engineer, augmented heavily by AI, build a massive, real-world, multi-product platform from scratch in a domain they know absolutely nothing about?
And the answer is an undeniable yes.
Yes. The velocity of those 11,134 commits was totally real, and the gap in domain knowledge was entirely bridged.
It proves that the barrier to entry for creating highly complex, nuanced software is lower than it has ever been in human history.
And that is what you, listening right now, should take away from this.
Mm.
Whether you are coding your own app or trying to manage a massive new project at work in a department you are unfamiliar with, AI is a historically unprecedented multiplier.
It really is.
It's the lightning fast crew that gets you 80% of the way there. But that final 20%, the DOM rendering edge cases, the complex network stream buffers, the nuanced contextual moderation, the strict legal data tracing that still requires deep human architectural thinking. You have to be the one orchestrating all the pieces.
The AI provides the engine and the horsepower, but you still have to build the steering column and the brakes.
Exactly. But I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, something that pushes past the code we discussed today. If AI can now entirely bridge the domain knowledge gap, meaning a single developer can build a highly accurate, complex astrology platform without knowing a single thing about astrology. What happens to the value of traditional subject matter experts?
That is the big question.
Right. If the AI holds all the facts, will the future of product creation belong exclusively to the synthesizers and the architects, the people who simply know how to wire the AI blocks together?
It definitely suggests a profound shift in the economy of knowledge. Expertise is moving away from knowing the facts and shifting entirely toward knowing how to structure the system.
Because at the end of the day, you can have the fastest AI construction crew in the world, and they can build you a beautiful, mystic purple room. But if you want the lights to actually turn on, you still need an architect who knows exactly how to wire the breaker box.